I think that we have to be aware and continue to hold accountable this hypocrisy. But I think the key thing now is to find ways to support this, to fund it. I received a proposal from two Ukrainians yesterday about debt relief, relief for the debt of Ukraine. Well, I thought this is good. It could go to help reconstruction and refugees. And then I thought, but it should be something global, because the food shortages and the other catastrophes which are going to come out of this war should be treated. Take Afghanistan for a minute. 6.5 trillion over 20 years. We can't pony up 5 billion to take care of displaced people, the humanitarian crisis. I think we need to think hard. But again, this is about what is true security. Security is not going to be benefited from people displaced and homeless and in refugee camps. And this is not Ukraine only. It's Syria. It's millions of displaced people. We need to find ways to really address that crisis, because it's going to be very dangerous and also lacking in humanitarian will.
Speaking of refugees, Chomsky and Ed Herman, in their book Manufacturing Consent, in one chapter, it's called Worthy and Unworthy Victims. So we have worthy victims, and they are in the Ukraine, the Ukrainians who are suffering now. But then you have unworthy victims, right, who are not receiving our solace or our gratitude or admiration. Palestinians, for example.
I studied McCarthyism, the suppression of dissent in this country. There's a neo-McCarthyism. And in that spirit, I would simply, some of this is constituent politics. There is a, you remember Captive Nations Week? There is a strong community which lobbies for its needs. I'm thinking of Poland and also Cuba. I mean, Cuba's determining our politics in fundamental ways. One has to be aware of this. And I think, again, one doesn't need to agree with Noam Chomsky. I do in most of my politics and spirit, but at least you need a debate. People need to know. A lot of people don't know, because they're not, as you know, this is part of Ed Herman and Chomsky's, the manufactured consent. You are given news often, which is not consistent with a politics of humanity.
Well, consistent with the facts as well.
Absolutely. The old line is, you have a right to your own opinion, but not to your own facts. Then you have, what are alternative facts? I mean, I think media literacy is an old fashioned. I do worry though, David, with all the money pouring into disinformation work, and they're reviving USAID, which had some good moments, but I've covered Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Voice of America over the years. You know, we're replacing one state thing with another, and it's not, in my mind, leading to a blossoming of independent thinking and factual-based thinking.
Do you see, for example, BBC Radio and TV, is it any better in its coverage?
So here's where I think it's better. For example, just as we're 2 months into the Ukraine war, there's like a coup in Pakistan, right? I mean, and a friend of me said the other day, why is it, this is a country that should be covered more. BBC led with Pakistan, I think, the other day. Now, how they covered it, I didn't watch it carefully enough, but the seriousness of topic, you're not getting it on much of our screens. Now, there's a new world, you can go on the computer, this and that, but you know, people are working two or three jobs. I mean, our work is also the media, is trying to tell a truthful, fact-based counter-narrative to some of the news we get. But you know, people don't have as much time to find those news sources. Listen, I hired Chris Hayes when he was 26 to be editor of the Nation. He used to do a wonderful kind of graduate student seminar Saturday and Sundays, but he doesn't have the ability to break out of the cycle. He can do little things, but it is a cycle, and it's the national entertainment state. In 1996, we did the first centerfold for the Nation, and news was a cog, a small cog in profit-making companies. And one doesn't want to be too reductive, but it is that. They face regulation in Washington. The FCC is looking at a new commissioner. I mean, these are real issues.
it said that truth is the first casualty of war. And we've seen that play out time and time again. Iraq being the most grotesque and blatant and irrefutable example of that.
I agree. But I hate to revise that. The day, I mean, it's broader than just war. The fog of war is critical to focus on, but there are other kinds of wars these days.
But when you don't have a media and an educational system, I will add, that provides context and background and history and countervailing voices to get a broader understanding, and you just don't have that. Someone that you've featured in the magazine, now passed on, Gore Vidal, he used to talk about the United States of amnesia.
There's
no memory of the past.
But here's what's happened, I think, which is the militarization of our culture. And I don't want to be too heavy about it, but I do think that that is the first way people approach some of the problems of today. And when you talk about bringing peace, there are too many people in our country who associate that with appeasement, capitulation, and this kind of belief to be tough, to be hard-headed. I've always felt that meant nothing got through. And David, you're interesting because I work with a younger generation, many of them very, very smart, but Iraq's feudal war, feudal history. And Vietnam for a whole generation is the war. And for another generation, it's Yugoslavia. But I agree with you how George W. Bush and Dick Cheney have been rehabilitated. Dick Cheney on the floor of the Congress, one Cheney's enough. But you remember they all kissed his ring? I'm just venting because well, I agree with you. Iraq was the most destabilizing project in modern contemporary history. And I think we still haven't recovered. I think that the offshoots of what we see even today.
You know, there's a lot of talk, obviously, about war crimes and war criminals. We had recently the spectacle of Condoleezza Rice and John Negroponte pontificating on what was going on in Russia, two arguably, former government officials who could be charged with war crimes if we had such a tribunal in this country.
So I was in touch with someone very wise about this. Well, Richard Falk and Peter Weiss, very wise. We never ratified the treaty, but Peter made the case that one should proceed in any case with a broader gauged process. Now, Rumsfeld, my memory, was served or was tried to serve him in Munich. And then of course you had Pinochet. So there've been attempts, but I think if we're gonna talk war crimes, again, you can't be hypocritical. It's, you know, there are war crimes that have occurred and need to be brought to accountability. There is none if you see Condi Rice or Dick Cheney pontificating or Negroponte pontificating about war crimes.
You have the case of Julian Assange, who Chris Hedges calls arguably one of the most important publishers of this epoch, releasing documents, actual footage of U.S. helicopter pilots shooting up Iraqis and chortling in the background, you know, like laughing, look what's happening to those guys. Assange has been persecuted and now prosecuted, as languishing in a jail in Britain right now, waiting perhaps extradition to the United States and imprisonment. What do you think about the Assange case?
Let's talk briefly of Chris Hedges. Chris Hedges is a prophet, unarmed, disarmed, forearmed, and but you know this story. I mean, they just deleted. Didn't YouTube delete 6 years of his RT or some measure of his RT program? I mean, we can look at Assange, and I agree, the persecution of Assange is a major story. But Chris Hedges, I mean, what's happening to a certain extent, he's not imprisoned, but this is not healthy for our country. People are very fearful of calling it out. I think of Snowden. Steve and I did an interview, 4-hour interview with Snowden in Moscow. You know, he doesn't want to be there, but the United States is, again, going to take on the truth tellers. I think we need organized groups. I do think some of the NGOs who do press freedom are not bold enough. You know, they do more abroad sometimes than bringing it to the United States. Now, that's, there are banned books now, freedom of speech, but I think the Assange is a measure of how corrupt our approach to independent dissenting media.
In an article you wrote for the Washington Post, How to Avoid a New Cold War and Focus on What America Really Needs, you say in the piece that in the United States, the hawks are in full voice, gearing up for a two-front Cold War against both Russia and China. And then you name Kurt Campbell. Who is he? He's not a household
name. He's a scholar. He's not the worst. I mean, there are others who are more hawkish. There's this national security strategy and nuclear posture of view. But the national security strategy of about a year ago now, I think, names Russia and China as the key revanchist adversaries of America, and that we're downgrading the counterinsurgency wars. So that's, you know, that is open and it's spoken of. And in Washington, there's kind of a surprise that China hasn't moved more quickly, you know, with Taiwan and all of those, but that's up next. The relationship with China and Russia will be interesting to watch. It's not clear. Russia has 10 times more traffic with the EU. It's not a natural relationship with China, but I'll tell you, China is all over Latin America, South America, with its Belt and Road Initiative. It was sending wheat to Cuba. It's kind of stepping back as the United States enters war. And China has done that before, but it seems folly. Taking on China is a different measure than Russia in some ways.
So what you had, you know, just the invasion of Ukraine on February 24th, just 4 days after that, the IPCC, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, it released its report in the, using the most dire language. And you know who's really been out front with this, to his credit, I think, is the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres.
That's good, because people lament sometimes he's not, but he has been very persistent. And
he's called the climate crisis code red. The clock is ticking. He's using the most graphic language. And the results are, you know, all the attention is on the war. It's so exciting. There you have Lise Doucet on the BBC with a burning building in the background. That's a lot more exciting than the rising levels of the oceans.
I think, you know, you've had more attention than in the past, but never sufficient attention. You can't give enough attention. This is the existential crisis. How it's framed, I'm a little bit of a heretic on this, because I think you need to link it to jobs, green jobs, and really build that out, but it's an existential crisis. But, you know, the yellow vests, one of them was asked the other day, someone said, well, climate crisis is an existential crisis. And the yellow vest person said, my crisis is to get to the end of the week and survive. And in there, one has to find a mutual crisis of resolve and resolution. I'm involved with a group called the American Committee for US-Russia Accord, and on it is a woman who studies illiberalism and does it with history, but the rise is real, and in this country too. I mean, I do think we're suffering from a time where there's the neocon and the neoliberal. The neoliberal, to quote Gramsci, you know, it's dying, but it's not, the new order is not yet born. And in that twilight,
a lot of morbid symptoms in that interregnum, as he said. Well, let's talk again about the war and what's going on. You know, the conventional narrative is that Putin way overestimated the ability of his armed forces and way underestimated the ability and the will of the Ukrainians to resist the invasion. Does that sound pretty accurate?
Yes, I think he underestimated the unity and nationalism of Ukraine. I think he thought Eastern Ukraine would rise up in support, more in support of Russia. I also think he thought there might be a blitzkrieg, I hate that term, but it might be very quick, like Crimea was. And I don't think he's listening to a range. I don't know about information. There has been miscalculation. On the other hand, it seems that Russia is now consolidating, and there are negotiations that are possible. Anatole Levin, I mentioned, and this is at thenation.com, says 90% of the agreements are there. It's neutrality, language rights, independent sovereign, security guarantees, non-aligned, neutral.
But can Zelensky deliver the goods from his...
I do think that he's a war leader, but I do think the forces, the constellation of forces inside the power centers of Ukraine are extremist, nationalist. There are others, but I think that contingent has little interest in resolving a negotiation. You could say the same about Russia, but I think there's more interest at this stage. 90% is a lot, but 10% is a lot too, before you get to any agreement. The longer it goes on, the more Ukrainians will be fighting Russians, and the more of a peril of, and I don't make light of this, of a use of tactical nuclear weapons, deeper weapons. And I think that is what we're witnessing with the shipping of heavy weapons. Now, people will say, well, the Ukrainians want those weapons. You know, that's, but on the other hand, the Ukrainian country is going to be ravaged with more weapons. And who's going to rebuild? And I do think the oligarchs, we should impound their yachts. I mean, that's a very interesting part of the story, all the oligarchs and what they're doing. One of them is working with Zelensky, a Russian oligarch, Roman Abramovich. Zelensky asked Biden not to sanction this particular oligarch because he was helpful in peace negotiations. I'm not sure where that stands.
Russian oligarch is now one word in the corporate media. You cannot have oligarch without the prefix Russian. You know, speaking of language and Chomsky and Herman again, you know, they're called oligarchs, but our people are called entrepreneurs.
I know. No, ours are called billionaires. No, it's so true. Language matters. And that's, you know, the demonization, legitimate or not, makes it difficult to work out an arrangement or negotiate. Demonization is a tool. And I want to just say one thing I think is very dangerous. And I think about younger scholars and writers. You know, there are people who have tenure and things like that. They can say more controversial things and be smeared, slurred. But a younger generation takes note. I mean, you know, it's the whole Putin puppet, Putin apologist. If you're skeptical of official language or official news, it becomes harder and harder to stick your neck out and say something of value.
Who supports Putin at this point? As the body bags, you know, come back into Russia, you know, as the reports leak.
That's very critical. And, you know, there's a movement that started many, many decades ago, mothers of Afghanistan, mothers of those who were in Chechnya, and the body bags played a critical role in Afghanistan. Who supports them? Diminishing group. Security and it's a term, silovaki, meaning, you know, the strong security forces. So it's not necessarily the army. It's kind of a fusion of intelligence and security. And they're probably, a strong group. But I'll tell you what's happened over the last 20 years is anyone who really felt strongly about better U.S.-Russian relations has been kneecapped. You can see that happen in different places. So it's a diminishing group. On the other hand, there was a poll the other day, as I mentioned, there has been some rallying around the power centers. Because you do start doing World War II parallels, which are not hard to do in a country which lost, you know, 20 million. And certainly an older generation that resonates. And then the TV and the repression of media. We don't need repression. You can just suppress a lot of news.
The Russian military is repositioning itself from the Kyiv region to the southeast, to the Donbas area, where there are these two kind of, I would call them statelets.
Yeah, they're republics. They call them republics, like little mini statelets within this larger region.
Now, what's going to happen there? Can you speculate on that? And the drive to Odessa, there's been commentary that Putin really wants to get his hands on Odessa because it's a strategic port.
So I think Mariupol became that as well. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with Odessa, but with the two statelets, I think that region, That's a complicated region which has subverted previous peace negotiations or negotiations as far back as 2014 and 2015. The status of those republics in Donbass, the larger region, but those have to go back to Ukraine. This sounds trivial, but one of the first acts Poroshenko, the chocolate oligarch, took was to ban the use of Russian in schools, in textbooks, and the return of linguistic rights would be a big thing. Mariupol, I think, as I mentioned earlier, is important for water, for connection to Crimea. But those, I think, are resolvable. It's neutrality and NATO, which Zelensky has many times said, we don't need to be in NATO, understanding that this was always the kind of jujitsu strangeness. They couldn't even join NATO if they were invited to join NATO right now because of the territorial difficulties inside Ukraine. So Charter 5, the Article 5 in the NATO Charter could not be invoked because you have to meet certain barriers. So there's an element of kind of surreal politics here.
In your Washington Post piece, you say that a new Cold War appears inevitable.
We're in it, David. We're not even in a Cold War. We're in a hot war. There've been a lot of debates over the last 20 years. Are we in a new Cold War? You can argue it's not ideological, right? It wasn't like communism versus capitalism, though Russia's capitalistic in ways. What we should aspire to, it seems to me, is a cold peace. No one's going to become best friends, but there are areas we need to work on. The Iran nuclear deal is already in peril, partly because of the fallout from Ukraine. Climate, these issues require some global actors, not friendship, but mutual security.
Also, food security is going to be a critical issue with
food shortages already. Ukraine and Russia are the wheat basket of the world. And that is imperiled in just a few weeks of war. So there has to be, I think, some strength and respect for those who've borne the brutality and barbarism of this war. But is it more war and more killing, more weapons? Or is there a way to provide security and a way forward that respects independence, sovereignty, and takes a measure, listen, if, you know, the war crimes, but I think it becomes a broader frame if it's honest.
You know, I'm hearing all of these things about the war in the Ukraine, you know, the tragedy of it and the, you know, the epic suffering and the refugee crisis, but I'm sitting in the United States. What can I do? What can an individual do to affect this situation?
Well, short of going and serving and volunteering, I mean, like refugee camps, not, I think the as much as you can do in your community to get people to understand what's happening in different ways, divestment from nukes, divestment from weapons, but also to communicate not simply to your congressperson, but to all levels of those who have some power, that war is not the answer. I know that sounds simple, but that we have a lot of work to do in this country to rebuild. We're not isolationists. We want to be part of the climate crisis treaty and all of that. But we need to step back and rethink how we engage the world. Restraint, dialogue, and not through militarization, not through weapons, not through war. It sounds goody two-shoes, but more and more, I think the basic message. I did a briefing for the Progressive Caucus with two other people. It was kind of surprising how little they had really come to understand the, you know, you need to give some briefings if you have the opportunity. But we are privileged. We're sitting here, but we need to use the tools each and every one of us has. And I've been doing a lot of work with women's groups and with those in the region, because I know Russians and a few Ukrainians. And Ukrainian groups, women's groups, to bring their voices into the discussion.
Thanks very much for your time, Katrina.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Katrina Vandenhoevel on Russia, Ukraine, the war, and the United States. Katrina Vandenhoevel is the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We are an independent nonprofit in our 36th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Noam Chomsky, Yanis Varoufakis, Chris Hedges, Angela Davis, Vandana Shiva, and Vijay Prashad. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for copies of today's program, Katrina Vandenhoevel on Russia, Ukraine, the war in the United States, and for Vijay Prashad's book, Washington Bullets, CIA Coups and Assassinations, just give us a call at 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977, or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Knorr with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer for men, but African American men are more at risk. That's primarily because it's often diagnosed when it's more advanced. The good news is that diagnosed early, most prostate cancer can be treated effectively. If you're a man over 50 or have a family history of prostate cancer, talk to your doctor today about a test. For more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
Pallet, I lay down across my bed. Got off my pallet, I lay down across my bed. I went to eat my breakfast, it blows all in my bread. Thank you. what you gonna do? Your dough roller gone. What you gonna do? Your dough roller gone. You better make some biscuits until she come home. Do you reckon it rain? The letter this morning, do you reckon it rain? Say now, hurry home, boy, your special rider, she did.
Kids, it's Krusty the Clown. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. All right, where's my money? What? Chintzy college...
back to school, I'll be lonely without you around. Hello and welcome to Breakfast for Dinner. This is DJ Chris Wired. Thank you for joining me. You just heard Secret Powers with I'm So In Love. We have some new music we'll be playing throughout the show. I hope you stick around, but first, let's take care of some business.
Mom was always very organized, but my sister and I noticed she started to forget things.
Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But Mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
My sister and I were there for Mom and each other.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
A couple other shows I want to tell you about here in WRCT Pittsburgh. Hot tracks, cool tracks, who knows? Tune into Faulty AC to hear a set of tunes that's as variable as the climate control in your first car. Mondays at 4, only on WRCT. And Democracy Now! Is a national, daily, independent, award-winning news program. Democracy Now! Hosts real debates, debates between people who substantially disagree. Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 a.m. It's now time for the WRCT Radio Calendar. Associated Artists of Pittsburgh presents Featured Artists Exhibition, an exhibition of artwork by artists from their monthly Featured Artists series. From horsehair pattern ceramics to laser cut acrylic pieces, the exhibition shows the variety of practices and styles of Pittsburgh-related artists. This is on display now through April 2nd. The gallery is at 143rd Street, Unit 107, Lawrenceville. And the hours are 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesdays through Fridays, with additional Saturdays posted online, which you can find at aapgh.org. You can also call at 412-361-1370. And masterful performer John Tye makes his Liberty Magic debut with his newest show, Road Signs. John Tye recasts a quintessential American road trip as a voyage to unearth what dreams are really made of. This new play with magic transports audiences through a time warp and into the wilderness, backlit by lanterns and bonfires, where past and present blur and audience members become primary characters in the evening's story. Road Signs will be at Liberty Magic now through April 3rd at 811 Liberty Avenue in downtown. For more information, visit trustarts.org. The Cranberry Artist Network presents their first exhibition of the season, entitled A View from Above or Below. Curated by Mike Panza, owner of Panza Gallery in Millvale, the works will feature the artist's unique perspectives on the world when seen from unusual angles. A View from Above or Below will be shown at Cranberry Township Municipal Center, 2525 Rochester Road, in Cranberry Township, from now until April 14th. For more information, visit cranberryartistsnetwork.com. And our own Carnegie Mellon's Master of Fine Arts 2022 graduates will be exhibiting their work at the Miller ICA Gallery on the CMU campus. Marianne Hoffmeister Castro, Lena Chen, Petra Floyd, and Matthew McGonaghy present Untitled Affairs beginning this weekend, March 26th. The NFA program at CMU School of Art is an interdisciplinary, experimental, research-based program that challenges artists to recognize social context and civil engagement as paramount within contemporary art. Students are encouraged to employ a comparative and intersectional approach to critical and cultural theories, allowing this inquiry to inform and expand what it means to be an artist and to make art within our contemporary condition. Their works are on display now through April 17th at the Miller ICA Gallery in the Purnell Center for the Arts on the CMU campus. For more information, visit miller-ica.cmu.edu. And the exhibit Mousetrap is on display at the Silver Eye Gallery. The photography of Patricia Volgaris and Whitney Hubbs uses the metaphor of a mousetrap to describe images to lure viewers into spaces and ideas that they might not expect. Both artists confront how women's bodies are depicted and perceived in contemporary culture through their experimental, playful, and risky photographs. The show's title presents an open question of who is truly empowered, who is the mouse, and what is the trap? That's on display now through April 23rd at the Silver Eye Gallery, 4808 Penn Avenue in Garfield. For more information, visit silvereye.org. And stop by the Pittsburgh Banjos Club's regular rehearsal every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Enjoy their wonderful music. Food and refreshments are available. Founded in 1988, the Pittsburgh Banjo Club is an all-volunteer band and organization that uses banjos, trumpets, tubas, and bass to perform popular music from the 1920s and the 1930s. The club rehearses at the Allegheny Elks Lodge on Cedar Avenue in the North Side. Reservations must be made by Tuesday at 5 p.m. for each Wednesday event. Call 412-321-1834 for reservations. If you or your organization would like an event included in the WRCT radio calendar, please send the details at least 2 weeks in advance to radio-calendar@wrct.org. Time now for the WRCT music calendar. Here's what's coming up this week. On Monday, March 28th, Honeysuckle with Reliable Child and Elkhound at Club Cafe, and The Record Company with Nat Myers at Mr. Small's Theater. Lots of stuff happening March 29th. Lynn Speakman Quintet will be at Backstage Bar. Bob Weir and the Wolf Brothers featuring the Wolfpack at Roxian. Wormhole Party Cannon Flub with Grave Birth and Fall of Babylon at Preserving Underground. Mitski with Michelle at Stage AE. Yantra, Nest, Kamikaze Zombie, and Nullum at Green Beacon Gallery. Pink Squeeze, Thousands of Bees, Scratchy Blanket, and Fig at Roboto Project. Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah at Club Cafe. And Circle Jerks with 7 Seconds and Negative Approach at Mr. Small's Theater. The Slow Death with Latecomer and Understatement at Spirit Lodge. And Cannons with Maddie Spees and The Painted Blue at Thunderbird. On March 30th, Mayhem with Wetane and Midnight at Roxian, Javier Sanchez at Kingfly Spirits, Distelfink at Greer Cabaret Theater, Fit for a King with Silent Planet, Hollowfront, and Avoid at Mr. Small's Theater, The Slackers with Inco Fido at Craft House, Sasami with Jigsaw Youth at Club Cafe, Corrine with Some Face at Funhouse at Mr. Small's, Henhouse Prowlers at Thunderbird, and Actors with The Shadow Event, Middle Children, and DJ Eric Ascari at Spirit Lodge. On Thursday, March 31st, Attack Attack with Conquer Divide Until I Wake across the White Water Tower at Craft House, Dan Bubian and the Delta Struts at Greer Cabaret Theater, Jerry Cantrell at Roxian, and Slaughter will be at Jurgles. And then Friday, Oregon Trail, Stagnator, Post-Mortal Possession, Befoul, and Belvibuth at Black Forge Coffee House, The Stone Throwers at Greer Cabaret Theater, Hit Like a Girl with St. Agatha and Over the Weather at Roboto Project, Pup with Cloud Nothings and Pink Shift at Roxian, Wolf Alice with Charlie Hickey at Stage AE Club, Obituary with Gruesome and 200 Stab Wounds at Spirit Hall, Lavender Country, Paisley Fields, Austin Lucas, Jet Holden with Thousands of Bees at Government Center, Ace Frehley will be at Jurgles, Moon Hooch with Jason Leach and Orange Music at Mr. Small's Theater, and Aqueous with Trailhands at Thunderbird. If you represent a Pittsburgh-related musician, band, or venue, and would like us to list your event in our music calendar, please send an email to music-calendar@wrct.org. Well, I promised you new music, and I'm going to deliver. New music from the Hoodoo Gurus. Their new one is called Chariot of the Gods. This song is called Carry On.
What a way to carry on. What a way to carry on.
The Scruffs with I'm a Failure. Before that, Van Duren with Oh Babe. The Grip Weeds with How I Win the War. And we start off with new music from the Hoodoo Gurus, Carry On.
The life of every child is precious. If you care for a child or teenager with a disability and have limited income and resources, they may qualify for monthly cash payments through the Supplemental Security Income Program, or SSI. Call Social Security at 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSIKids to learn more. That's ssa.gov/SSIKids. Message produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Rita's Italian Ice joins you in supporting WRCT. Rita's offers a variety of frozen treats, including its famous Italian ice, made fresh daily with real fruit, available in over 80 flavors. Rita's has several locations throughout the city of Pittsburgh, including a stand at 3712 Fifth Avenue near the University of Pittsburgh campus. For more information, visit their website at www.ritasice.com. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Well, continuing on with some more new music, this is new from Lanny Flowers. His latest album is called Flavor of the Month. And we're going to play a song called Lost in a Daydream.
Everything looks better from a certain point of view, and you know that they do. Why should you be looking for the other side of you when you know that you do? Never end.
And learn to play guitar.